Final seconds of the game. A chance to score, and the chance has gone begging. If your business's commerce platform keeps missing the target on golden opportunities, get the MVP you deserve. Get Shopify. Shopify is the commerce platform revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide. Whether you're a garage entrepreneur or IPO ready, Shopify is the only tool that you need to start, run, and grow your business without the struggle. Shopify puts you in control of every sales channel. So whether you're selling signed football boots from Shopify's in-person POS system or you're vending vintage shirts on Shopify's all-in-one e-commerce platform, you are covered. And once you've reached your audience, Shopify has the internet's best converting checkout to help you turn them from browsers to buyers. What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is truly a global force, powering Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across over 170 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ranks, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ranks to take your business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/ranks.
Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello Rank Squad and welcome to Champions League Takeaway here on Ranks FC. Looking back at all the action from the second legs of the quarterfinals in Europe's Premier Club competition. My name is Jack Collins and I'll be your host today. And joining me as ever, our Champions League guru, my co-host, Mr. Dean Jones. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. I'm good. Probably better than Pep Guardiola this morning, but that's rare. I don't think there's many times I can wake up in the morning feeling better than Pep Guardiola. So I'll take the small win and he'll have to take the small L. But yeah, a big couple of days in the Champions League. We're down to the final four and we need to get stuck into this. To me, it's starting to look inevitable who wins the competition, but we'll get on to that in a minute.
You've been saying this for some time, so we will come on to that. But we'll start with Wednesday's action and a dreadful night for the Premier League. Now, it's not very often that you kind of think about it and you think, Spurs fans probably in kind of real time should have been supporting Arsenal here. Now, I'm aware that they won't have been. And even sometimes, you know, it's cutting off your nose to spite your face. But the fact that a German side has knocked out a British side or a Premier League side, the fact that another Premier League side has been dumped out of the competition as well, has completely changed the picture on the coefficient. And I remember tweets a few weeks ago or people talking about it and going, no, we need to consider the top five as Champions League places in the Premier League. Well, by the end of tonight, as we record this Thursday morning, that could be done and dusted, especially if Leverkusen knock out West Ham in the Europa League. It could be that that fifth spot in the Champions League, that extra place, is locked in as a German spot. So whilst I imagine there is plenty of kind of joy and I suppose a bit of banter between the clubs in terms of the English sides getting knocked out, actually, in terms of the Premier League, City and Arsenal haven't done anyone else favours.
Yeah, I mean, I said the other day, Tottenham don't deserve to be in the Champions League anyway. So, and it's too soon for them. There's nothing in my eyes.
Well, they might get there. Yeah, they might finish fourth.
I don't think they should. I don't think it's going to benefit them. They're in the early learning stages. They need to get there the season after next season so they can actually properly learn from it and benefit from being in it. And next season, is a year when they should be focusing on winning a domestic trophy or actually making the top four. The complications of getting into the Champions League group stages and then coming bottom of their group isn't really something that should be bothering them.
Or winning the Europa League. I mean, they won't have a group. It'll be a league because the new system kicks in next year. But I think that Tottenham will have, if they do get there, will have a good shot at the Europa League. Let's start with City, though, and Real Madrid, City. These games were referred to in the week as the new modern Clasico by Carlo Ancelotti, by Pep Guardiola, by some people around them. And I thought it was an interesting title in that these games have been about as high quality, I think, as anything in the world of football over the last couple of years. Real Madrid came out on top yesterday on penalties after a 1-1 draw. I thought City were probably the better side across the course of it. What did you make of it? What were your three takeaways?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any doubt that Man City were the better team on Wednesday night. It looks on paper like the Premier League is in the mud because the Arsenal and Man City have been beaten. But Man City were the better team. And I think that the takeaway that I'll look at first is that some defeats you just have to accept. And from a Man City point of view, of all the European nightmares that they've suffered through the years, I feel like this one actually you should be able to take a little easier because it's... Yeah, it'll sting because you dominated and you should have won. But that in itself is a real positive. And because City have already won this tournament now, I don't think the pressure is and the pain can be quite as deep. And you've lost to Real Madrid in a penalty shootout. Like, Pep Guardiola says he's basically accepted it and made peace with it. His side should have won. And they didn't. They've lost on penalties. Bernardo Silva's penalty is like one of those things you just have to accept. Like, he's tried something. The goalkeeper has just stood there. It was like one of those ones on an old school computer game where you take a pen and the goalie just like, cheers.
You know what? Like, the ball didn't come back from the crowd for a bit. The City fans had it, right? And it took a while for the ball to come back to play. I think the keeper doesn't stand still if the ball doesn't come back. If the ball doesn't take a while to come back from the crowd. I think City fans might have shot themselves in the foot here.
Yeah, it's an interesting take. Was it Modric that kicked the ball in there?
Yeah.
Modric kicked the ball after missing his pen. So Modric has missed a pen and still forced Man City to miss their pen.
Mind games.
Without even realising. There's no way he's done that on purpose. But at the end of the day, this is a game when City have dominated. They've had twice as much possession. They've had 33 attempts on goal. And they should have won. That's all there is to say. They should have won. They had the better game plan. They had the better players on the night. They had the better opportunities to win. They dominated. Yeah, they haven't won. And there's nothing you can do about that. At the end of the day, it's come down to a penalty shootout. And there's nothing you can really do in those circumstances but hope for the best. And especially, Haaland and De Bruyne are off the pitch at that point because they couldn't carry on any longer. So your best penalty taker's gone. So you're already up against it. Your goalkeeper's having to step up in the penalty shootout.
Very amusing.
A bit of mind games.
You imagine that's a bit of mind games as well. But like, if he scores, like, does it affect everyone else? I mean, it didn't. But I kind of appreciated the audacity of it as a kind of maybe just try and throw the odds in a different favour kind of move.
Yeah, I have to say, I feared this talking point was going to be Foden and Kevin De Bruyne cannot play in the same team anymore. I got towards half time and I was like, I can feel this narrative coming. Like, they can't play together and people are going to be talking about this if City can't find a breakthrough. If we don't, De Bruyne was actually playing fine in the first half and he was finding gaps in behind Toni Kroos and kind of exposing him a little bit, to be honest. But Foden was ghosting a bit. And once Foden moved more central, you got more out of him and you're like, okay, of course these two can play in the same team. So I was relieved about that, I have to say. But yeah, the second half, let's face it, was one of the best halves of Champions League football you could have possibly ever seen from Man City or expect from Man City against an opponent like this. Especially when Doku came on, I was like, there's no way they're not going to get another goal here, surely. Like, This guy is just so direct and to the point. Grealish has had a good game, but Doku is hurting this team.
Yeah, different strokes and different sort of scenarios. Yeah,
he just has a
different solution.
He has a different approach from that flank, and he's so dangerous. But it still didn't come. So yeah, my main takeaway is Man City, yes, it will hurt, but I actually don't think this should hurt you as much as some of the painful ones that you've suffered in the years before you actually got your hands on this trophy.
Yeah, I saw Stephen McInerney, friend of the pod, yesterday tweeting. He was like, it doesn't hurt as much now we've won it. And I completely can buy that.
He was like, it's funny, I just saw a tweet from him actually that went out this morning. And he was like, it actually feels a lot worse this morning than it did last night.
what I was thinking was that earlier you were like, oh, I feel better than Pep Guardiola does. I actually think that there is a sense with that. And having spoken, and we've spoken about the City documentary on a couple of occasions of late. But actually, what I found interesting was when City play well and don't get the result, Pep is nowhere near as mad as actually when they play badly and do get a result. It's actually when the performances don't match it. And I thought last night the performance was absolutely fine. You know, probably better than that. I thought they were good for the most part of it. I can't see Pep being like absolutely furious about that. Yeah. And in a way that, you know, obviously once you've been through some of the things that City fans have experienced in this competition, the Spurs loss, the VAR drama at the end of that one, the fact that they were kind of expected to win it for quite some time and didn't. Once the kind of burden, I suppose, is off your back with having actually lifted the trophy and to go out like that in that kind of circumstance to Real Madrid, yes, of course it's frustrating. And City will feel that, you know, the opportunity to win the trophy back to back was one that they had very much within their grasp. But equally, I don't know if that can hurt you quite as much as it has in the past. So I think you're probably right.
Yeah. Takeaway number two, there's absolutely no need for extra time. Absolute extra time at this stage of the competition should be gone, right? There are various reasons for this, but here is a couple of the main ones. First and foremost, after the two teams have played each other twice, 90 minutes, then 90 minutes, and still failed to be separated. We don't need to see another half hour of it, see if they can do it, right? That is completely unnecessary. Secondly, it's not fair. Why do Man City, so by getting the second leg at home, you're getting the advantage of having an extra half hour of play at home, yet away teams have had their advantage of away goals taken away from them in recent times.
Yep.
What is that about?
I actually agree with this. I actually think extra time, and I'm quite contrary to your opinion on extra time quite a lot of the time. I think that there is a space for it in the game. But I do think that, you know, given the fact that the away advantage has been reduced, and look, for better, I think, and I was quite skeptical of this rule change, I think that the games have become generally more exciting. Because both there's less of a sense of jeopardy now at home. So actually, I think sides go for it a little bit more, which I think actually improves the games. And you know, 31 goals, I think, across the quarterfinals is a new record for the Champions League at this stage of the competition this year, which I think speaks to one, the quality of the, you know, some of the attacking football, but two, the fact that maybe that kind of sense of holding back a little bit has gone. So I think that rule change, I mean, you can fall on either side of that debate. I actually think it's probably been for the better, and I was skeptical at first, but I agree with your extra time.
Yeah, I just feel it's completely unnecessary. No one actually, literally nobody wants to be seeing extra time. The fans don't want it. The players don't want it. The coaches don't want it. Maybe the broadcasters want it because they're getting some more hold time on viewership, but I just think it's time to scrap it. There was no flow at all to that that extra time. It was unwanted. It was unwanted football. Should have gone straight to pens, right? Anyway, we did go to pens. Extra time was pointless. And the main takeaway is that Real Madrid are going to win the Champions League.
I was waiting for it.
This, I've said for a while, just feels inevitable. Real Madrid did not play well in this game. Rodri said after the game, I could only see one team out there. And Jude Bellingham actually gave an interesting interview where he said, we don't play structured football. We play off the cuff and we have a bit more freedom. And I thought, that's actually a really interesting take, because I watched this game and I think, actually, you're so loose, right? You're like extraordinarily loose for a Champions League quarterfinal team that are expected to go and try and win this competition. I mean, their passing was pretty slack. They were giving it away in some weird positions. And so I don't think that's part of the game plan. But when you hear him talk, you're like, okay, well, especially given where Carlo Ancelotti is in his career right now, he doesn't really feel the pressure of needing to win the Champions League. If he doesn't win it and he gets sacked and he gets sacked, you know, he could deal with that. He'll be at peace with that himself. But yeah, they just have a fearlessness of losing almost. And they'll accept, if you think of, we'll talk about this in a bit, but obviously Atletico Madrid should be in the semi-finals, but they refused to just do what they're actually very good at and see off games and close up shop. And Real Madrid actually defended like they were okay with this game going to penalties. Like they'd had the shootout, the wild game had already been and gone. And this was a game that they didn't really fancy doing that again in, because they looked at Man City's team and probably thought, well, given what we've got, we'd probably just try not to get involved in a basketball match here. You look throughout the game, like Bellingham's produced one of the best touches you'll ever see to help them get to the opening goal. Rodrigo scores the goal with brilliant reactions to actually stick the ball away. Fantastic. Lunin had one of those games where he was just unbeatable almost. I didn't think City were going to score in the end, because I was like, Lunin's having one of those. Like, he's had them quite a few times in the Champions League this season. And he's doing it again. When he means business, he really means business. And even once he was beaten, they managed to hold tight. And it comes down to those pressurized moments. And Modric has missed one. And you're like, okay, it's advantage City. They're at home. They're in the shootout. They should win this now. Straight away they miss. And Madrid are like, this is done. We are not missing another spot kick. Rudiger tucks away the winner like splendidly.
Oh, I don't know. It's like, it's a great penalty because it goes in, but he definitely doesn't strike this cleanly.
Well, yeah, that might be a fair point. But still, it's in. It's in the perfect spot of the net, right?
Oh, yeah, don't get me wrong. It's a good penalty. Spot. I'm just not sure he actually means to do exactly what he does. But you know what? They all count. I'm not criticising him.
It's game over, mate. It's game over. If you can play this badly, if you like, and still beat the holders, the actual best team in the world, then who's going to stop you, right? Bayern Munich aren't that good. Borussia Dortmund definitely aren't that good. And PSG always bottle it. And I'm not even convinced they're that good. It's Real Madrid's, mate.
I mean, it's hard to argue with you at this point.
I mean, it's impossible to argue with me until the day they lose.
Yeah. I mean, this is it. And then there is obviously the whole Reyes de Europa kind of thing, Kings of Europe. And
they're just the best at Champions League. That's it. We just got to accept it.
It is true. And look, you spoke about them being loose. Like, I think that matters. And the Bellingham interview matters. He gets it, right? He understands what it's about. And the whole interview, I thought, was spot on in terms of understanding the vibe, but also what Don Carlo's Real Madrid are trying to do, right? It's not always about being the best team of over 180 minutes. It's just about making sure that they have the opportunities to go and hurt teams. And that's exactly what they did. And it wasn't clean. It wasn't always pretty in this game, but they did exactly what they needed to do. Now, you can speak about City being profligate. You can speak about all of those things. Ultimately, Real Madrid, unless you absolutely blow them out of the water, as City did last year, are always going to be in games and you always feel like they're going to find something. And this isn't particularly in-depth analysis, I don't think, but there is just a sense that of kind of looming, it's coming with Real Madrid. You know, at some point, they're going to just make you pay. And that's exactly what happened here.
They should have lost. They absolutely should be out of this competition. But they're not. So they're not going to win it.
All right, let's come over to Bayern Arsenal, which was 1-0 to Bayern Munich. Joshua Kimmich scoring an excellent header, the only goal of the game. My first takeaway is that Bayern might be better in Europe than they are in the Bundesliga because they're allowed, and I say that sort of inverted commas, to be a bit more conservative. They're not as expected to dominate teams and dominate the ball and dominate the game quite as much. I probably wouldn't go so far as to call them an underdog because it's Bayern Munich. But in transition and in the wide areas, I thought they were magnificent here, to be honest. I heard some murmurings at halftime from some German analysts that they were supposed to be the home team. But I thought that this kind of game really suited them quite nicely. And in all honesty, they'll go into the semi-final in a similar vein. They're not the neutral's choice, kind of like a punchy underdog in a way that Dortmund might be because this is Bayern. But coming into another game with what you expect now to be a similar flow, and I think they will allow Real Madrid to have the ball and kind of try and hurt them in transition, I think they'll try and do it again. And in a way that you're saying it's just Real Madrid's now, I'm not writing Bayern off after watching this because having seen what they're doing and seeing the way that sometimes they play in the Bundesliga and you can see the frustration building, it didn't feel like that at all. And it didn't feel like that in the stadium, I don't think, either. It wasn't like the Bayern fans were there getting on their team's back. If this was 0-0 at halftime in a Bundesliga game against almost anybody, Bayern fans would be like, what's going on? This isn't good enough. But here, they're given that kind of a little bit more of a leash to play slightly differently. And I think it suits the way that this Bayern side play. And that's why at this point, I don't think I can write them off.
Yeah. I mean, none of this really makes sense, does it? I mean, we just talked about Man City. Now we're talking about Arsenal, two teams involved in one of the best Premier League title races we've ever seen. And we flip it over to Germany and you've got Bayern, who have absolutely flunked this season in domestically. And they've seen off one of those challenges. And they'll also be joined in the last floor by Borussia Dortmund, who have been even worse this season, not put up any threat at all across the course of the season. Yet these two teams have made it to the last four of the toughest competition in world football. Makes no sense. But you're right. There is something about Bayern that potentially does make them a threat for sure.
Yeah, I mean, to flip it to Arsenal and point two, I think Arsenal did a lot right across these two legs. So they were at a really high level across the majority of 180 minutes. But you can't just sit at this point in the Champions League, keep the ball, recycle well, and hope the teams will make a mistake. You have to force it. And I didn't think yesterday night that they did that. It didn't help that Saka felt stunted, and we'll talk about that a little bit more in a second, and that Ødegaard was really well marshalled. But equally, you need your big players to step up and be counted and make things happen on occasions like this if you're going to knock out a European giant. Arsenal are on the right trajectory, and I think there's plenty to admire about where they are right now and how they play, but they're not quite where they want to be just yet. It's 21 semi-finals for Bayern, second most behind Real Madrid. And I'm not going to go deep into experience again because I think we did that last week, but I thought it told here. And the sense that Bayern were just able to manage the occasion in a way that Arsenal weren't, and weren't able to channel that into the right areas to get those players who could make an impact into the areas where they can make those impacts. All of it felt like Arsenal were kind of waiting for Bayern to almost shoot themselves in the foot. And that didn't happen here because Bayern weren't forced. And all of these points kind of feed into each other, to be honest. But Bayern weren't forced to do that. And they weren't forced to do that by the crowd. They weren't forced to do that by Arsenal. And when their opportunity came, they had the nous and clinicality to take it. I thought it was a really good performance from both sides. I thought it was a really good game considering there was only a single goal in it. But Arsenal need to be able to do more. It gets to April, right? And you can start to see, I think, the fact that 13 or 14 of these players have been utilised throughout the entire season. There is a sense maybe that Arsenal are just starting to run out of steam. And we spoke about this with Liverpool as well, with a small squad and a small group at the wrong time. And I don't think you can say that for City. It didn't feel like City were running out of steam yesterday. They just got a little bit unlucky and they were a little bit wasteful. Arsenal feel like they're running out a bit of the energy that they had earlier on in the season. And maybe that's just the fact that they're three or four players away from where they want to be. Now, people will listen to this and be like, yeah, but Arsenal spent loads of money. And they're right, right? But Arsenal spent money relatively, I would say, well. I can't pick loads of these Arsenal signings, especially the ones that have gone for big money, and say they haven't really worked out. They just came from a lower point and a lower kind of base level than where a lot of the rest of these teams have come from. And so that was needed in order to inject them into the conversation where they are now. and more investment is needed if they're going to inject themselves even higher up the conversation. But the path and the trajectory is fine. They're on a learning curve. They would have learned a lot about themselves last night, but I didn't think they forced the issue enough.
Yeah, interesting. The problem for Arteta is he hasn't really rotated much this season, right? He's had his team, and by and large, we've been able to predict that team about as effectively or efficiently as we could of any team in the Premier League, to be fair. And when he does rotate the team a little bit or look to make changes to protect players, he gets criticised for it, like he did at the weekend against Aston Villa when he tried to change the team a little bit, probably with this game in mind. And it's backfired because he's lost both the games. And no lie, there will be a section of Arsenal fans talking about whether Arteta is the right man for this job now. And it doesn't matter what you think about that. He's staying, right? I think Mikel Arteta will sign a new contract before the start of next season. And probably should. Like, and he needs some more depth, some more quality in this squad. Next season, there are no more excuses. This season, I'm continuing to say, look, they weren't expected to make it to the last four of the Champions League. They're not expected to win the Premier League title. The pain comes when you suffer three defeats in a week that will kill it all off. And they've lost to Villa, which has slammed their Premier League hopes. They've lost to Bayern Munich, which has killed their Champions League campaign. And now they've got a game against Wolves on Saturday night, threatens to kill their Premier League title. I mean, they must be, they look exhausted. They look drained. Saka's not as influential as he was earlier in the season. All these sorts of things will now be probably overanalyzed. And it's tough. We know what Arsenal fans can be like. I'm not sticking you all in the same bucket here, but yeah, they can be a bit flaky. I know plenty of them. And we talked about this the other day, how Emirates started emptying as soon as Aston Villa scored a second goal. The away fans will be great on, you know, at Molineux, and there's no doubt about that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm not going to criticise that for one second. Arsenal do have good support. But I think this is a time for unity at Arsenal, and I'm not sure we'll get it. Like, if they can stick together, realise how far this team has come so fast, and then go again one more time next season without the threat of a Klopp-led Liverpool. Yes, Man City will still be there, but hopefully they finally lose some of their momentum, some of their luck at times. Maybe De Bruyne leaves. Maybe a couple of things like that do happen and they don't replace them effectively.
I'd be very surprised, but yes.
Maybe something like that happens that gives Arsenal an extra hope.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And like, again, the trajectory feels like it's on a good path. I agree with you. This is a time for unity. It's a time for sticking together and not starting to question things, especially because there's going to be a lot of criticism from outside. There's going to be a lot of laughter from outside if Arsenal end up trophyless this year. The progression levels, I think, are on the right path, and that's absolutely fine. They're moving. As long as they finish the season well, even if they don't win the Premier League, if they finish the season well and they get tighter to where they were from last season to City, I think that's progression. You've got to kind of appreciate those kind of levels. Finally, and number one, and again, feeds back into the other two, but Tommy Tactics is back. Or at the very least, Tommy Tactics thrives in situations like this. So now into his third semi-final with three different clubs, actually, in the Champions League, and has shown that he can do it and cut it at this level. Now, the football isn't always, I imagine, what Bayern fans want to see, but it has worked again here, and he's now into quite an elite group of managers who have made it to three Champions League semi-finals. He got so much right here, I thought, and I've been pretty open with some criticism for Thomas Tuchel across the course of this season. I think a lot of it has gone wrong, but the midfield here, absolutely spot on. So much energy and heart and grit from Goretzka and Lima. I thought they were sensational. And I spoke about nullifying Ødegaard, about marshalling and making sure that he didn't have those opportunities to open the game up. Yes, obviously it's Martin Ødegaard. He's still going to have one or two moments of pure class that you know you can't deal with. You can't keep him quiet for the entire 90 minutes. But on the whole, I thought Goretzka and Lima were brilliant here. And Joshua Kimmich playing right back and moving into those spaces at times, knowing when to go, knowing when to kind of come into midfield and add that extra body, knowing when he had to stay wide and defend one-on-one. Really, really impressive from those three in particular. And also Mazraoui on that left-hand side. This felt like a really brave call. And people might not think that. They would have seen Mazraoui playing at left-back for Ajax. But the last time that Tuchel played a right-footed left-back, they played Sacha Boey there against Leverkusen. Yes, okay, it was a left wing back role, but he got annihilated, absolutely annihilated. And Thomas Tuchel, off the back of that, got annihilated for it. If this had gone wrong, he would have been crucified. But Mazraoui, I thought on his stronger foot, was the perfect option to nullify Saka as a winger trying to cut inside onto his strong foot. I thought Mazraoui had a brilliant game. And just generally, I thought in the wide areas and in the heart of midfield, Bayern were really, really good in terms of stopping Arsenal getting at them. And this is where someone like Thomas Tuchel, especially a coach with that kind of slightly defensive mindset, who is quite happy to soak up pressure at times and utilize transition, utilize set pieces, utilize crosses from wide areas, comes into his own. I thought this was a really impressive tactical performance from Tommy Tactics. And in a year where his stock has fallen quite dramatically, and rightly so, this was some reason to kind of, for teams, I think, next year to look at him and be like, okay, there is definitely something here that we could still get involved with.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. Like, it doesn't hurt his CV at all when he's going to be looking for a job in the summer. Like, he's got another Champions League semi-final to show for it. I looked at the Bild team ratings. Kimmich got man of the match. You know, they talked about the fact that the side of his side of play was just completely sealed. He gave Martinelli no space, and obviously makes the difference in the game too. But Lima did not get a good rating. Lima, they described, yeah, this is literally what Bild have written. He's got the lowest rating of any player in the Bayern Munich team. They said he very shaky. He seemed nervous, not close enough to his man. Always dangerous ball losses around him. Arsenal's progress always came through him.
Wow, I think that's harsh. I mean, there were spaces in those areas at times, but I thought Lima covered a lot of ground. Yes, he's not as tight and kind of safe on the ball as some others around him. He's not quite as technically good as, but I thought that the energy that he brought to the midfield was really, really impressive. And I thought that him and Goretzka together worked nicely. They weren't as ball secure as, you know, when someone like Pavlovic is on the pitch, because Pavlovic is so comfortable in possession. But I thought that Lima did a very, very good job at breaking up play. I think that's very harsh.
Yeah, I just thought I'd show the opposite view. Wow. People watch football in very different ways.
Yeah, that's a really hot take from Bild.
Not known
for sensationalist headlines, are they? So I suppose there's that taken to it. Right, so we will wrap Wednesday's action there, and we'll be back after the break to talk about what went down on Tuesday, where there were far more goals to get stuck into. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Champions League Takeaway here on Ranks AFC, where we're going to start by talking about Borussia Dortmund progressing against Atletico Madrid. Dean, you watched this one. What were your big takeaways from the game?
Yeah, ridiculous game. Dortmund beat Atleti 4-2 on the night. So that means they win 5-4 on aggregate. Think back to the first leg. I was saying Atleti should be making it through to the semi-final, no doubt. But that goal that got Borussia back into the tie in the first leg was a big one. And Atleti did pay the price, actually, for not putting it to bed. The first takeaway is that Sabitzer is on one at the moment. In the early stages of this game, Sabitzer did miss a good chance. And it's easy
block.
It's a great block. There's no doubt about that. But Sabitzer definitely also takes a bit too long over the opportunity.
Yeah, fair enough.
But what's easy to happen in moments like that is you just use it as a marker and a reflection of his overall performance and refer back to it. And in the commentary, they were doing that a little bit. But as the game wore on, you realise what vibe this guy's in at the moment. He's actually scored twice at the weekend against Gladbach. And in the end, he came up with a telling goal in this one. as well. Look, I'll be honest, he's not one of my favourite players in the world to watch, and he wasn't good at Man United. So I saw a bit of people going back on, you know, reflecting on his United. Maybe we should have got him. Maybe we should have done this. Like, I don't necessarily think that's true, because I don't think, you know, Ten Hag could have done anything with him, because he can't do anything with most people. But, you know, when you look at the overall performance here from Sabitzer, his pass to Mattsson for his goal.
Glorious.
He crosses for Fulkrug.
Glorious.
More than that, like, Sabitzer's showing a real strong mentality, and it's obviously something that Dortmund need, because they often don't have it. And he was kind of putting himself on the front line. He was willing to take hits. He was willing to take risks. And he's got good running power too. And good stamina that gets him through big, big games. And I think, you know, I don't feel like Dortmund have that many big game players that you can count on. And Sabitzer has proved to be that man actually on this scene. So it was a bit of a surprise, but maybe it shouldn't be. But Sabitzer, big performance.
Yeah, agreed. And actually, United, I think there was a sense he didn't feel fully fit. Didn't feel like he was quite at the level that we have seen from him before at Leipzig. He didn't really work at Bayern, although I think that was more to do with his kind of profile in the side than anything else. But yeah, it does feel like we're starting to see that impact again, and what he can do in these games. I thought he ran the midfield here. And to be honest, both him and Julian Brandt had really, really good games, I thought, in terms of the way that they were able to make things happen. But the way that Sabitzer bursts into the box from deep, the way that he can make things happen when he's in that final third, really, really impressive. And it does feel like Dortmund are starting to find, maybe not a rhythm, because Borussia Dortmund are famously the kind of team that will win a massive game against Atleti and then lose to Mainz at the weekend after. But I think they are starting to find a sense of how they work in big games. And look, they'll take some heart in the fact that PSG didn't beat them in either of the group stage games between the two this season. They will take heart in the fact that they feel like they're learning how to deal with these occasions again, and the fact that they're in this stage of the tournament. Sabitzer, yeah, a very crucial element of that, I think.
Yeah, a second takeaway on this one is that Angel Correa, his impact was huge on this game. And I thought he was going to win it for Atletico, to be honest with you. I mean, Correa is a strange player. He's almost one of those that is like, always the bridesmaid, never the bride. Like, this guy just barely ever starts matches. So far in the Champions League this season, Correa's only started twice. In La Liga this season, he's only started 7 times. But he's been substituted in 18 times in La Liga and 8 in the Champions League. And I tell you what, when he came into this match at halftime, he really, really changed the feel of it. Atleti had to come out showing that not only could they get into this game, but that they believed they could get back into this game. And Correa put in an all-round, all-energy, like, full-impact performance that I honestly thought at one stage was going to lead to him being the hero of the night. Obviously, it didn't take too long for Atleti to get back in the game. 4 minutes after half-time, they forced a Hummels own goal. But then Correa did get the equaliser on 64 minutes. The Atleti end went absolutely berserk. And it was because they could feel it had turned, right? The game had gone back in their favour. Mm. Correa's determination to finish that chance was just like, it was unbelievable. I think he has 4 goes at it. He's just like, bang, bang. He's just like knocking on the door, and then just slams it into the net. He's just like, have that. And then, like, I was really pleased for him, because I like him generally as a player, because I do always feel that he causes problems. He doesn't get talked about that much, obviously, because he's in a team where he lives in the shadows of Morata, who should have scored early on in this game, and Griezmann. And yeah, it's just that's the nature of the game, right? But yeah, I thought big shout out to Correa, because he could do this. Ultimately, it didn't work out like that. And the game did end up flip-flopping again in the other direction, which was wholly unexpected for me. I did not see that Borussia Dortmund would have the nous to turn that back around, or the bottle, to be fair. But 71st minute, Fulkrug scores. 74th minute, Sabitzer scores. The stadium just takes off and that's it. It's 4-2 and Borussia Dortmund go through to the Champions League semi-finals. Now, the main takeaway here is that Edin Terzic could pull off an absolute miracle. Like, this is an extraordinary story. He wasn't even expected to get through the season the way things were going, right? Like, Dortmund are fifth in the Bundesliga, and that's just not good enough. Really, he should be sacked by now.
It's going to be a Champions League place.
Yeah, true. Suddenly he's changing that. But, yeah, somehow he's in a Champions League semi-final. And I wouldn't actually be that surprised if Dortmund beat PSG. In a way, I feel like that's a tie that might suit them perhaps more than this even did initially.
Somehow, I agree in that I think it'll open out. That game.
It'll open out. That's yeah. I think that's it. You didn't expect that to. You didn't expect this Atleti tie to have this many goals in it. It's bonkers that there's been 9 goals across the two games. But somehow, this club of bottlers have adopted a monster mentality, and they've made 2 comebacks here across the Atleti game. And Terzic is the hero. He can't get into the German top 4, but he's in the Champions League final 4. That's weird. Let's not forget Dortmund. They won their group of death. They were in there with Newcastle, AC Milan, and PSG, and they came through that. Domestically, it hasn't been going great, but Dortmund have been, I guess, stabilizing without being anywhere near extraordinary. What's happened now is that Edin Terzic not only has made this season special, he's not getting sacked. He will be Borussia Dortmund manager next season. And
that's a bold play.
That is interesting. And I mean, that's not just me saying that. That is now being reported in Germany that this is a game that saves him, not just in the short term, but that Dortmund will find it now virtually impossible to sack him because he will also be now in the likelihood he's in the Champions League for next season, which the goal is always to qualify for next season's Champions League and to have success of some sort. And he has the chance to get into a Champions League final, and they are now probably going to qualify for next season's Champions League anyway.
And a knock-on effect of that. Borussia Dortmund are almost playing for themselves in that regard. Yeah, like, whereas we talked about, you know, the Arsenal and the City results impacting Spurs.
Yeah, Borussia Dortmund were like,
we actually really could do with maximising this coefficient as far as we can. And so it stands for quite a lot, doesn't it?
I think if Terzic is staying, then I think Sancho stays as well. I mean, Sancho's not the best version of himself yet, but he's definitely going through painful growth, as Ange Postecoglou would put it. And I tell you what a last laugh this would be. Jadon Sancho ends this season by playing in a Champions League final, and the world's actually gone mad. But as a result of that too, you don't want to go back to Man United. No. Cut the ties there. I'm told that actually Dortmund think they're going to manage to secure a second loan here. And the fact that Terzic is probably now going to be staying adds to the belief of that, because Jadon and him have a pretty good relationship. And yeah, it's all suddenly looking very rosy for old BVB.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, delighted for my doppelganger Edin Terzic. it's very nice to see him knocking around in Champions League semi-finals. Well, yeah, massive result for Dortmund in various different ways. All right, let's come on to the final game, which was Barcelona 1, PSG 4. 6-4 to PSG on aggregate.
I predicted this, yeah.
Luis Enrique oversees another remontada in the Champions League, but backwards this time. My third takeaway is that PSG have the capacity to break anyone and win this thing. Mbappe was quiet for 150 minutes of this tie, but that's okay because he roared into life and scored 2 and probably should have had a hat-trick. Dembele was a menace despite being booed for the entire game. And Bradley Barcola, welcome to the big stage. This was very, very impressive from the youngster. Xavi wanted control of this game, and that's all well and good. But when PSG unleashed the transitional ability of this front three, they forced mistakes that changed the entire dynamic of the tie. They're risky, but they have the ability to change any game in an instant. I thought Vitinha was sensational in the middle of the park once again. I tweeted it. I thought he was the best player on the pitch in the first leg, even though PSG lost. And I thought he was really brilliant here again. You know, with that ability to run with the ball, to make things happen, to open up spaces. And yes, obviously there are caveats to this in that Barcelona had 10 men for long periods of pitch. But actually, you kind of look at the way that that happened. And I'll talk about Araujo in a minute. But Barcola getting in behind is exactly what PSG were trying to do. You know, to allow, and even when they went behind, they were like, it's okay. We know that opportunities are going to open up for us in these spaces. And they did so, and they were able to, you know, it feels like, yes, this team still have that ability of the individual to make things happen, which we've criticized PSG for across the course of it, that they're a team of individuals, not a team side. But actually, it does feel like there's a bit of cohesion within it now. And that whilst that individual ability is still being unleashed, a sense of the general direction of what they're trying to do, rather than it just being give the ball to Neymar, give the ball to Mbappe, give the ball to Messi, and let them do what they want, it feels like there is a little bit more of a sense of everyone working for the same end, even if those ends still rely on the individual abilities of the front three, which has obviously quite drastically changed. I think that PSG have a real shot here. And they will go into that tie against Borussia Dortmund as favourites. And look, we spoke about it being open and that might suit Borussia Dortmund. Well, it'll definitely suit PSG. Because yeah, if games open up, having the ability of these three up front on the ball and the idea that you can bring Gonçalo Ramos, who's a brilliant kind of in-behind runner, and Randall Kolo Muani, who can play in various different roles, but also has that ability to drive up people and make things happen off the bench. If this game opens up, yes, I can absolutely see why people are, you know, saying that that would suit Dortmund, but I think it suits PSG far, far more.
Yeah, possibly. And like, I'll be honest, I think I'd rather see PSG in a final. Like, I'd rather, they are a bit, team, they've got the stars that I would prefer to see a Champions League final in London that had Mbappe in it, right? But it'll be interesting
Mbappe
to see
winning the Champions League against Real Madrid before joining them would be quite something.
This is quite the narrative, right? All season we've spoken about Alonso and Liverpool, and it's actually Mbappe and Real Madrid that's the one. But yeah, it's going to be intriguing to see whether PSG managed to carry out the game plans effectively. That's basically what it's going to come down to. Luis Enrique knows that he could and should win this game and get them to that final. He's just got to know that he can trust this group of players. And in the past years, that has been a problem.
Yeah, no, I can get that. I mean, look, my second point is that Barcelona, as it stands, I don't think I'm miles from being back, but they're way too emotional. When you're a man down, your manager can't be getting himself sent off for kicking a camera, right? Like, it's just not okay. And in a game where they really needed to have someone on the bench pulling the strings and dealing with it, Xavi got himself sent off for losing the plot over something. And like, he's screaming about Vitinha and screaming about the fact that Vitinha shouldn't have been playing because he felt he should have been given a second yellow card in the first leg. It all just felt like he was, you know, way too pent up. And we've talked about this with Arteta before, right? And the fact that, you know, when the games get emotional, actually they lose control. This is exactly what happened with Barcelona here. And actually, in a way, it really didn't happen with Arsenal. They didn't lose control emotionally of this game. Barca did. Completely lost their heads. And look, I thought the referee got most of the major decisions right. Like, I appreciate why some Barcelona fans don't think that Araujo's tackle is a red card, but it is. And actually, I just thought he was a bit card happy with Xavi. Now, don't get me wrong, man smashes a camera. You've got to, at some point, you got to blame yourself for that. But he also sent off another member of the Barcelona coaching staff as well. It just felt all like way too like in their own heads about it, way too, and kind of the complete contrast on the opposite bench where everyone was just like, nah, it's okay. And I appreciate they're winning, or at least in the tie at that point and having the ascendancy. But you just need to keep your head at some point. And this is it. So there's been a lot of chat about Xavi. This is his first loss since he announced he was going to stand down at the end of the season. And all of the calls have been for him to stay. And I think that would probably be the optimal solution for Barcelona at this point. But games like this, you are a bit like, mate, you've been sent off three times this season now. Stop it. Like, that's more times as in one season as a manager than he ever got sent off in his playing career. Like, you need to be able to just, like, cool it. And Barcelona weren't able to do that. PSG were. But the core of this group, you know, Kubasi, excellent again, especially in difficult circumstances. Araujo was the one that you would think was the rash 17-year-old with what he did. You've got to let the player go there. You're two goals up in the tie, 20 minutes in. You just can't be getting yourself sent off. It's wild behaviour. And at times it felt like Kubasi and Gundogan were the only ones who had their heads tied on at this point, because João Cancelo goes flying into a challenge that he doesn't need to make and gives away a penalty that gives PSG the lead. Again, that's the kind of thing you expect from a young, rash defender, not someone of João Cancelo's calibre or stature, even though, you know, defensively he's not always been perfect. He's going away from goal, Dembele. He's going the wrong direction. What on earth are you doing? Like, you're already down a man. The tie is starting to swing against you. It's level on aggregate. You know, they're winning on the night, and you go and fly into a challenge like that. It is absolutely chaotic behavior. If Barcelona can start to iron that out, then I think that they're in quite a good place. And I didn't think that in October, November time. You know, I thought that Barcelona might need to rip it all up and start again. I think we're seeing that there is some sort of planning, succession planning in place for next season, where Barcelona can look to maximize their strengths. But I don't know how much of it is by design and how much of it they've fallen into by accident, but it's working. And yet the emotion of this game completely got to them, and that needs to stop if they want to start progressing in fixtures like these.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously emotions can have big bearings on these games. I talked about how I've expected that that's what Arsenal's downfall would be this season. I feared that Arteta's intensity on the touchline would seep into his team and that could be their big downfall. But yeah, maybe it's Xavi actually that's been the best example of how that can affect the team.
Well, I mean, my number one point here is almost the opposite of it, right? Because experience matters, and in Luis Enrique, PSG have it in spades. Cocky when he knows it's what his players need. Pre-match, he was basically like, I know we're going to win. We've never won a second leg away from home that we've lost the first, but I know we're going to win. He's humble when they need it. He spoke afterwards about how it was bittersweet to knock out Barcelona. This is one of the most tactically astute men on the planet, and he's pushing PSG in the right direction. And actually, what I found really funny was that he basically came out afterwards and was like, I play with the Barcelona DNA. And there was a bit of kickback against that. And actually, I don't think PSG did at all, because Enrique might be Barcelona built, but my God, can you tell that he spent time at Real Madrid? Because PSG, and we spoke about it when we're talking about Real Madrid, have that sense of being like, oh, okay, we can do what we want. There is a little bit of looseness and freedom about the way that PSG's individuals are allowed to behave, which isn't really what you expect from, you know, a Guardiola model or a Barcelona Cruyffian model. And I think that's what's really interesting about this, because if PSG and Real Madrid came up against each other in the final, I think that Lucho is probably the best example of someone who might be able to get the better of Ancelotti in that I allow my players the freedom to make their own decisions, to make off-the-cuff moments and make them happen. Now, you know, long-time listeners of the podcast will know that I am a Lucho enthusiast. I absolutely love the man. I think he is a wonderful coach. And I think, but his ability to adapt here to this PSG system and the growth that I think we've seen of this team throughout the season makes me think that they are the second best shout. You know, I think that it's weird. It'd be weird if you didn't have Real Madrid at favourites at this point. But I think that they are the best shout of knocking out Real Madrid or beating them in a final. Do the way that they play, with the kind of expression that's allowed within this team, I'd be very intrigued if these two sides are in the final, because not only is that narrative arc and a lot of cross-pollination between PSG and Real Madrid already. You know, we talk about Mbappe potentially going to Real Madrid this summer, or very likely going to Real Madrid this summer, but Hakimi as well, Asensio coming off the bench here, got, you know, the reception you'd expect from Barcelona fans. I think that Lucho is managing this team really well, and they're starting to show, and he's starting to show why they were so keen to appoint him as manager. He has massaged this team into, you know, a one that respects him. I think a lot of his decisions, you know, vis-a-vis Mbappe, have been criticized or at least talked about heavily in the press in terms of taking him off, leaving him on the bench in some games. But actually, he's allowed him to be, you know, to be himself in the Champions League. And on the whole, I think that this is a very, very smart appointment. And I'll be very surprised if PSG aren't in the final based on what we've seen here.
Yeah, yeah, it's going to be, it'll be so interesting to see him in the final because of the managers that he's going to be up against in that final. Like, and it is kind of what you want. You want the best coming together. And I'm not saying this detrimentally to Borussia Dortmund, because you always also want a team that's plucky and underdogs and can create a new narrative. But
oh yeah, absolutely. I'd love to see Borussia Dortmund in the final. I just can't see them beating this PSG side, you know, in the game that we're expecting. I mean, maybe Terzic pulls something out of the fire.
Well, this is it. Like, he's Edin Terzic, and the other three managers left in this competition are Luis Enrique, Carlo Ancelotti, and Thomas Tuchel. So he's up against it. But sometimes it works because the expectation isn't there. But it would be surprising if one of those three coaches doesn't come on top.
Yeah, agreed. Maybe it's Edin Terzic's time. I mean, I'd love to see it, but I find it difficult to buy into at this point. And with that, I think it's probably time for us to wrap this up. So all that's left for me to do is say thank you very much to my co-host, Mr. Dean Jones.
See you in the semi-finals, Jack.
I've been Jack Collins. This has been Champions League Takeaway on Ranks FC. Thank you so much for listening. We have another episode that's already gone up this week talking about the breakout stars of this season. So if you haven't listened to that, would highly recommend you do so after this. It was a really enjoyable one. We talked about three from the Premier League, and then I picked the player from each of the other six major European leagues to discuss as well, which was plenty of fun. We got through a lot of ground. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you very shortly. Take it easy, Ranks Boys. Peace. Final seconds of the game. A chance to score, and the chance has gone begging. If your business's commerce platform keeps missing the target on golden opportunities, get the MVP you deserve. Get Shopify. Shopify is the commerce platform revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide. Whether you're a garage entrepreneur or IPO ready, Shopify is the only tool that you need to start, run, and grow your business without the struggle. Shopify puts you in control of every sales channel. So whether you're selling signed football boots from Shopify's in-person POS system or you're vending vintage shirts on Shopify's all-in-one e-commerce platform, you are covered. And once you've reached your audience, Shopify has the internet's best converting checkout to help you turn them from browsers to buyers. What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is truly a global force, powering Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across over 170 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ranks, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ranks to take your business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/ranks.